And we're holding on Mem Gimel, Amud Bey is the third line of the wide lines, seven lines from the bottom. And we started learning yesterday about the story of Achan, who took from the spoils of Yericho, which were supposed to be off limits. It was supposed to be that all the metal things go to the treasury of the Mishkan, and everything else gets destroyed. That is off limits. And Achan had violated that, and the result was that the next time the Jewish people went to war, they lost. And in the end, they caught Achan through the girdle, as we learned yesterday, and he admitted in public, which is why he got his place in Olam Haba, but they executed him. So now we're going to go more into details of that story. Well, the last thing we said was that actually that Achan, this wasn't Achan's first time that he had done such a thing, and we learned that he had already done it several times previously. We had an opinion that there were altogether three times that he had done this, taken from a cherem that he wasn't supposed to, twice in Moshe's times and once now in Yeshua's times. And according to another opinion, we said, according to Rabbi Yechanan, in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it was actually his fifth time doing it. Either way, the question is, so in that case, why up until now were the Jewish people not punished for it? Why only now do we have that when they went to war, then people were killed in the battle? Because Hashem did not start punishing the Jewish people, meaning the tzaddikim, the ones who didn't do anything, who didn't do something wrong, for hidden averus, for things that people don't know about, until they crossed the Yarden. Once they crossed the Yarden, then there was Arevos. Then when they heard, in particular, when they went to Har Gerizim and Har Evel, and they did the Brachas of Klolas there, whereas we're going to talk about further on Memgal and Aleph, that was very shortly after they crossed the Yarden. And then at that point, they accepted on themselves, Arevos, that even a Yid does something in secret, then we're all taking responsibility for it, and therefore, so now, at that point, somebody does an Aveda in secret, then Hashem can take it out on the Sibur. And then it's their job to ferret out what's going on and get the guy punished like they did over here. As opposed to before that, before they'd crossed the Yarden, then no. Therefore, if there was going to be punishment, it was going to be for Achan alone, and Hashem being Erech HaPayim, then he was patient and didn't punish him yet. Rashi and Tosfos discuss what the actual Girsa is over here. Whether the Girsa is Shaloi Onash Al Nisoros Ad Sha'over Es Yarden, Hashem did not punish for hidden averus until they crossed the Yarden, or the other gears to the other way around, that Hashem does start punishing for the hidden ones after they cross the Yarden. Rashi says it basically amounts to the same thing. The point is, in other words, that until Avrus Yarden, then it was on an individual basis. But now, when we have the pasuk, as the Gemara is going to quote, Hanistoris l'Hashem aleteinu, then it means that now we're taking on responsibility for Hanistoris. Tosfos points out that there would actually be a little bit of a, the Gemara is going to derive it from the fact that we have dots over the letters on Vahaniglis Lonul Vanenu Ad Olam, but Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of the different Girsos, but whatever the case, the point is, before they crossed the Yarden, this Indian didn't exist. The Oruch HaNer, by the way, points out that in that case, then we'd have to say either what it means is that either we'd have to say that like this, the war against Yericho, in fact, would have been after the ceremony by Har Gerizim and Har Evel, because they did that on the day they crossed the Yarden, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon. So first he explains that no, actually maybe this was before they accepted the Arevos. And then he says that on the other hand, maybe actually what the Gemara means is that it has to be the Avera took place after they accepted Arevos. Only then would they be punished collectively, and in that case then the taking of the spoils of Yericho would have been after that. Okay, in any case, so that difference between Moshe's times and Yeshua's times. So the Gemara points out Ketanoi. This is like Macholkes Tanoim about when, in fact, that way that they're punished for Nistoris took effect. The Braita says, when the Pesach says, "Hanisodes l'Hashem elokeinu," the hidden things are for Hashem our God, "V'haniglus lanu l'vanenu ad olam," and the revealed things are for us and our children forever. So in other words, what we're saying, on one level, the Pesach is saying, if people do Averus in secret, then it's at l'Hashem elokeinu, it's up to Hashem to punish him because we can't be responsible. But v'haniglus, when it's something revealed, when we know that took place, then it's lanu l'vanenu, then it's on us and on our children if we don't punish him. So the Braisa says, Loman nokod alonu ulvanenu val ayin shabaad. Now, in the Sefer Torah or in Chumash, you have the words lonu ulvanenu. Each letter of those words has dots on them and so on top of them, and so is the ayin of the word ad. So why is that? So Rabbi Yehuda says that means that Hashem didn't start punishing for Nistaris until after they crossed the Yaudin and until they accepted the responsibility on how grisim and how evil. The significance of the dots, Rashi explains it like this. In general, when you have dots on words, then it means that as if you should erase those words, as if you should read the pasuk without those words. So what it means is, in other words, so if not for the dots, then we would say that's how it's always been. The dots are telling you it's not always, only applies until we cross the Yarden. Now, Rashi also goes on to point out, really, then the dots should be over the letters of Hashem Elokeinu, because we should say, or L'Hashem Elokeinu, because we would say, in other words, that right now it's L'Hashem Elokeinu, but after we cross the Yarden, then it's not going to be L'Hashem Elokeinu anymore. But it's not Derech Eretz to put in dots on top of the letters of Hashem's name. The dots, again, mean as if it's going to be erased, and after all, you're not allowed to erase Hashem's name. So therefore, instead, the dots are moved over to the words Lonu Ulvanenu, and to the Ayin of Ad, and it's the same letter. It's 11 dots, therefore, to represent the 11 letters of the words L'Hashem Elokeinu. So that's a point that Rabbi Yehuda then was saying, that up until they crossed the Yarden, they were not being punished for Nistaris, but after that they are. So now this Avera of Ochans was a Nistar. It was something that he did in secret. And therefore, the Jewish people, now that they crossed the Yarden and they went to Hagrizim and Harevel and accepted Arevos, then they're responsible for one another. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos discusses some other ways of understanding it, that it means that the dots, in fact, on Lono, Vanenu, and Ad are faket, that the Midah only begins taking effect when they cross the Yarden and not before that. Now, if you had the entire word Ad had dots on it, or not the entire word, but if both letters of the word Ad had dots or didn't have dots, then you would say, then it means both Nisodis and Niglos, there's a difference between before and after the Yarden. By putting a dot over only the Ayin, it means there's a difference between one type of Avera and another. One type is punishable on the whole Jewish people only once they cross the Yarden, and the other one before it. So that's the point of Rabbi Yehuda. Omalei Reb Nechemia, but Reb Nechemia asks Rabbi Yehuda, "V'chi onash al nistaris la'olam? Does Hashem ever punish for nistaris? V'alei kvanema ad olam." The pasuk says forever. So that means, in other words, that the nistaris l'Hashem alakenu has to be in effect forever. Rabbi Nechemia learns, "K'shem shalei onash al nistaris," the same way as Hashem never punishes the Jewish people for nistaris when the Shoyim do Averis in secret and nobody else knows about it, Hashem does not punish the Tzibur for it. The ones that are openly, Hashem doesn't punish the Tzibur because of the Aveira of the Yochid until they cross the Yarden. So in short, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Niglois Hashem always, before and after the Yarden, Hashem punishes the Tzibur for, because they knew about it and they should have done something about it. The Nistaris, after they cross the Yarden. You would ask, how is that fair? How can they be punished for Nistaris? One point after all, Kol Yisrael, Arevim Zelazeh. The point is, in other words, that what a Yid does affects the Neshamas of all the other Yidin, and to begin with, they should make it impossible for such Averis, even in secret, to take place. We're saying there's Machloikas Rabbi Yehuda Menachemia. So the Machloikas is like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Niglois, Hashem has always punished the Tzibur for. Nistaris, only once they cross the Yarden. According to Rabbi Nechemia, Niglois, only after they cross the Yarden, and Nistaris, never. So the point is, the Ne'iri makes a point, in other words, that how can Hashem punish for the Nistaris? Because the Chachamim and the leaders of the Jewish people are supposed to always be investigating what people are doing in the city and look after the Nistaris as much as possible. So if there's something they could have made it, they could have prevented it somehow, and they didn't, then they're held responsible, according to the Yehuda. Meanwhile, according to the Nechemia, no, it's Nistaris, and therefore they're off the hook for that. So in any case, that Rabbi Yochanan was saying in the name of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon that the Nistaris are punishable on the Tzibur only after they cross the Yarden, that would be specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. So now the question is according to Rabbi Nechemia, Ochan my time at Yanush. Well, then in the case of Ochan, why was the Tzibur punished? Since that was Nistaris, and according to Rabbi Nechemia, Nistaris are never the Tzibur is never held responsible for them. And the answer is it wasn't so Nistaris. Mishum to have a Yadibay, Mishum to have a Yadibay, Ishtar Banav, his wife and his children knew about it. So therefore it's not Nistaris anymore. Now how does that help? How does that mean therefore that the whole Jewish people know? So the Chamer of Achaya says in that case, the Chamer of Achaya, we've been reporting a lot these few days, actually it's a pirush from the Knesset HaGdola on Or Masechta. Anyway, he says that a wife and children tend to be talkative, so then people probably knew about it. But that's a bit of a doichet, because then why does Yeshua have to do a girl? They should be able to start asking around, and eventually somebody will blab. So there's a different answer. Also, the Sanhedrin Tana, another Pirush on Or Masechta, gives a couple of explanations. One of them is that the fact that he did it in a way that his wife and children know about it means that he's not like this. You have, after all, when a person does an avera in public, sometimes it's not as bad because it shows he's not concerned for the honor of Hashem, sure, but he's also not he's not concerned about the reaction of other people either. Whereas if he does it in secret, it shows more that he's afraid of what other people are going to say, but he's not afraid of Hashem, who he's always watching. Here, where he does it in a way where his wife and children know, so it means that he's only the opposite of what the Chamer of Achaya says. He knows his wife and children won't tell it to anybody else, but that means he's more concerned about his own covering. So now, we're saying that that's there. Therefore, Hashem takes it out on the Tzibur so that they'll find it out. That explains why only now and why the previous Charamim that Achan had violated didn't cause this kind of reaction. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to go through and darshan some of the psukim in connection with the story of Achan. So we learned yesterday that after the defeat by Ai, so Yeshua and the Skenim are tearing their clothes and falling in front of the Aron and pleading with Hashem to what's going on over here, and Hashem replies, Chota Yisrael, the Jewish people have sinned. So why the expression Yisrael in this case, especially we know Yisrael is the more honorable name of the Jewish people. So Amr Rabbi Acha Bar Zavda, we learn from this, Afalpi, and it could have said Ha'om, for example. Amr Rabbi Acha Bar Zavda. From this we learn that even though they sinned, they're still considered Yisrael, and therefore the Pasuk doesn't just relegate them to Ha'om or use the name Yaakov or something like that. They still have their kedusha even though they sin. Amr Rab Abba, Hanu Da'amri Inchi, this is like people have the expression, Osa Dekoi Beni Chilfi, a hadas that stands among the thorns, Osa Shnei, it's still called a hadas, but Osa Korulei, and people still call it, and people still call it a hadas, and it doesn't lose its identity just because it's among the thorns, or the Chilfa also can, Chilfa actually, it actually translates Chilfa by a French word that means weeds or thorns or something like that. So even though it's among degraded plants like that, nevertheless, it's still a hadas, it still has its fragrance, and that doesn't change. The same way, no matter how far, no matter how low a yid falls, nevertheless, he's still a yid. This, by the way, has implications in halacha. We have in halacha, for example, that first of all, mice and mechol yoyim, people come to Chabad houses, for example, and join a minyan, even though, for example, they're not yet shomer Torah or mitzvahs, but you actually have that a famous Uli Achron, the Maharash Dam, learns from this regarding a din that you have even a mumer
Kedushin are still Kedushin. You have an exception. You have it says that the Shulchan Aruch brings an opinion that if he's Machal Shabbos with a Hesia or worships of a Dezara, then his Kedushin are not valid Kedushin. So the Maharaj Hashtam says, well, you see over here, Ochon didn't do such Averas. He stole from the Cherem, but he didn't do these kinds of things that we're talking about, Machal Shabbos with a Hesia or worship of a Dezara. So therefore, what we can say, if he hasn't reached that level yet, then he's still considered a Yid. So even though Marsha adds that still, the Gemara is going to say soon, he was over on Kola Torah Kola, nevertheless, he's still not considered, he's still not considered a Goy, so he's still considered a Yid.
Said he was Machal Shabbos
before Hesia. We were Machal Shabbos, but it wasn't before Hesia. Because we just argued that it was Nistore, so even if it was Niglas, it wasn't necessarily in front of, if it had been in front of 10 Jews, then Yeshua doesn't have to do this whole investigation to find him. The Gemara continues. Hashem says to Yeshua, "The gam ovrus brisi ashetzivisi oisam." They've also violated my bris that I commanded them. The gam lokhum nacherem. The gam, it actually says in the pasuk, they also took from the cherem. Gam gonvu, they also stole. Gam kichashu, they also denied it. Gam somu b'chleihem, and they also placed it among their possessions. So five times it says in the pasuk gam, or v'gam, really it says in the pasuk. So why? Omer of Ilam, Mishum Rabbi Huda, from this we learn that Ochan violated the five chumashim shenemachamisha v'gam, because it says five times this word gam. So what he did was tantamount to violating all five chumashim. For one thing, because the Gemara is not going to point out, but it's brought in other places that one problem was what he had done is he had taken the spoils on Shabbos, and in every one of the five chumashim you can find something about Shabbos. Anyway, the Omer, also for that matter, you can find in every one of the five Chumashim something about Gneva, something about that you're not allowed to take something that's not yours, which is what Ochan did. The Omer of Ilam Meshum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Masmarta, Ochan Moshech Ba'ur Losef Hoya. Ochan pulled his Urla. A person has a bris milah, then now it's possible to take the skin, on the Aver over there and stretch it out so a person looks like he's not Gemalot. It's a serious avera to do that. In fact, when we say in Pirkei Avos that Hamefer Brisa Shal Avraham Avinu is one of the people, but Ein Lechelik Olam Haba, Mefarshim explain one meaning of that Mefer Brisa Shal Avraham Avinu is a person who does that. He's Moshe Far Lasei. He pulls the skin, stretches the skin over there to make it look like he does not have a bris milah. So now, Rab Ila is telling us that Ochan did that.
I don't understand the practicality. If it's a live piece of skin, it will always bounce back.
No, it's possible to stretch it out so that it won't bounce back. It's not necessarily an operation. It's possible, whatever, skin is stretchy and eventually you stretch it enough, then it'll maintain its shape. Historically, we have examples in Jewish history of people who did that. It mentions, for example, in the books of Hashmonaim, that in the years before the Nes Chanukah, when the Misyavnim were gaining power in Eretz Yisrael, they had gymnasia in Yerushalayim and in other places where people would go and play sports, and in the Greek style, they would play them without clothes. So there were Jewish men who would go there and would be embarrassed of their bris milah, because the goyim considered it a shameful thing, so there would be Moshech Bar Lasei. So such things are possible. I don't know. I've never tried it. You've never tried it. But evidently, it's possible to do. Anyway, so here we're saying that Ochan did that. How do we know? Ksiv Hocha v'gam ovrus bris. One of the things Hashem accuses is that they violated my bris. Uchtiv Hosam as brisi heifar. And we say that bris milah, a person has violated Hashem's bris, which in fact the Gemara in Yevamos explains, teaches us about that a person is not allowed to be Moshech Bar Lasei. And then he's chayev punishment from Hashem Koris for doing that. So the Gemara says pshita. Well, yeah, if we said he was over on all chamisha chum shei Torah, then of course he was over on that as well. So the answer is ma'od etema b'mitzvah gufei le'pokar. You might say maybe in a mitzvah that applies on his own body, maybe he was not so machker himself. Yeah, he was doing lots and lots of averus, but maybe he didn't go to that extent. Kamash malon, therefore, Rabbi Ila tells us that he even did. With that said, though, there are Mephoshim who say that maybe it doesn't mean literally. Ben Yehoyada says that when a person does an Aveda again and again, it's tantamount to like this taking his Orla and stretching it out. Like as if, so to speak, you could say every time he does the Aveda, he's stretching out the Orla, the Ruchniyistika Orla, over his Neshama a little more, and eventually it gets stretched out and covers him and envelops him completely. And then there's a famous Lomda Shapiro on the Sefer HaMitzvahs of Rabbi Sadia Goin from Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perla, a great Goin who lived 150 or so years ago. He brings a point that when a person has relation, when a Jewish man has relations with a goita, it's considered kind of like Moshech Bar Lasa. The Gemara in Eidovin mentions that such a person, when he comes to the Olam HaEmes, then his Orla is taka pulled forward, and Avraham doesn't recognize him as being Gemalat, and therefore he winds up in Gehenim. On Omud Beis, the Gemara is going to tell us that Achan, to a certain extent, was like Zimri, the infamous Zimri, who cohabited with Cosby. So therefore, in that sense, we can call him a Moshech Bar Lasa. The question, and we would think that the mitzvah gufa like poker, and the answer is that nevertheless he did. Then the Gemara continues when it says that also nevola b'Yisrael. Hashem says that the person who did this, when you find out who he is, Hashem tells Yeshua, you have to punish him because he did a nevola, a disgraceful, vile thing among the Jewish people. So Amar of Abba Bar Zavda, Melamed Shabal Ochan Naira Moirasa. We learn from this also that Ochan had relations with a Naira Moirasa, which was considered as a Naira Moirasa is a form of Eishes Ish, but it's considered like the most severe form of Eishes Ish. We're going to learn in the next parak that in that case there's skila involved as opposed to most other kinds of znus with an eishes ish, which are chenek or sometimes sreifa. So that's upgraded to skila is by naira mayrasa. Because ksiv hocha v'chiasa nevola, ochtiv hasem kiasa nevola b'Yisrael. You have the same word nevola used in that connection. So the Gemara says pshita, again, isn't that obvious? Again, if he was over on Hamisha Chum She Torah, then it includes that as well. And the answer is Ma'od Tema, Kula Hai, like Poker Napshe. Again, you might say that maybe he wouldn't go to such an extreme to do something which is Rala Shemayim V'Rala Brias, because after all, he makes her Osir to her husband, he's humiliating her family, maybe he wouldn't have gone to that extent. Nevertheless, Kamash Malon was saying that no, Rabbi Abba wants to tell us that nevertheless he really did go to that extreme. However, Ravina Omar, Ravina says, doesn't actually mean that he had relations with the Naira Mayrasa. Just means Dine Kinaira Mayrasa Dibiskila. It means how was he punished? In the end, he got skila the same as a person who has relations with the Naira Mayrasa. We don't have to say that he actually did such a blatant Aveira. Next. The Gemara continues. Amalei Reish Galusa Rav Huna. The Reish Galusa, who was the governor of the Yidden in Babel, he had tremendous political power. Some of the Rosh Galusa themselves were Talmid Chachamim. Some of them, on the other hand, were not so good to the Chachamim. And then you have in between ones like you have over here, where he's maybe not such a great Talmid Chacham himself, but he respects the Chachamim. Anyway, so he asks Rav Huna. Ksiv, the Pasuk says in the end, when Ochan is getting his punishment, Vayikach Yeshua es Ochan men Zerach, Yeshua took Ochan, Ves HaKesef, the silver that he had taken from the spoils of Yericho, Ves HaDeres, and the robe that he had taken. A few Pesukim earlier, Ochan lists all the things that he had taken. There was a couple hundred shkolim of silver, there was a fancy robe, Ves L'shoin HaZahav, and a gold bar. So all those things, those were the three things that he had taken from Yericho. Then the pasuk continues that Yeshua took Ves Bonav, Ves Benoistav, his sons, his daughters, Ves Shoda, Ves Hamurai, his oxen, his donkeys, Ves Soina, his sheep, Ves Oloi, his tent, Ves Koshaloi, and everything that he had. And the pasuk goes on to say that they stoned him. So the question is, Imhu Chota, Bonav Benoistav, Machotu. Okay, Ochan did a terrible Aveira. What did his children do that they were going to get Skila as well? Well, according to your svara that you're asking on the pasuk, what about, you could say, imhu chota ko Yisrael machatu, then you could also ask the rest of the Jewish people didn't sin to deserve skila either. Dichtiv, and the pasuk continues, v'cho Yisrael imay, that Yeshua took along the whole Jewish people. So it obviously doesn't mean that they all got skila. Ella lu doisan. Rather, we have to say, why were the Jewish people brought along in order to give them musr and to make them fearful, so they should realize the consequences of a person doing this kind of thing in order to, this way they would never do such a thing again, they would never violate a chayim again. Hachanami said then the same thing, as far as his sons and daughters, kedelu doisan, it would mean that he's doing it in order to scare them like that, so they should know, they should see what happened to their father and learn a lesson from it for the rest of their lives, but not that they themselves actually got skila. With that said, though, and before Shem will explain that maybe they helped him out with taking the spoils and all, and therefore maybe they were actually chayav misa themselves. Okay, the pasuk continues. Vayiskevu oisam ba'ish, they burnt them with fire. Vayiskevu oisam ba'avonim, and they stoned them with stones. So the Gemara.
That's conflicting.
Yeah, the Gemara asked the Tarti, where they gave them two misses.
You can say that refers to the money. But the people get stoned.
Oh, wait. Amaravina, haroyal srefa l'srefa, the things that can be burnt were burnt. For example, the money and the robe and whatever, kesef azav of gadim, the silver, the gold, and the clothing, that was burnt. Haroyal, and also, for example, the tent, let's say, because it says they brought a tent there, haroyal skila, things where skila is appropriate, the people and the ochan himself and his animals, l'skila, then they got skilla. So it's not both for all of them. It's one punishment or one consequence for one of them for one group of things and the other for the other. And again, the point is, Rashi says this was a knas. Again, ludus es acherim. Really, it's not like why would Ochan's tent have to be burnt? Why would his animals have to be given skilla? This is all part of the ludus es acherim. This is all part of putting a fear into other people that they should realize what they stand to lose if they try such a thing themselves. Okay, let's look at the actual list of things that Ochan took. So he says, "Va'era b'shalol, I saw among the spoils a deres shinar achas tova, a very nice fancy robe from Shinar. Shinar is Babel, by the way. Rashi mentions on the pasuk." Now, what it is that, like this, we talk about there were 31 kings in Eretz Yisrael that the Jewish people defeated and killed. Each one of them was not necessarily a king only of a territory in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is not really a large enough country to have 31 different kingdoms in it that should all be that powerful. Rather, what it is Eretz Yisrael was like every king in different areas of the world over there would have a palace in Eretz Yisrael. So that would be like part of his kingdom, and it would be like that was the place to be. Like you weren't a chosh of a king in that time unless you had a palace in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, this king of Yericho, which is where they found this, had he ruled over parts of Babel as well. So he had this robe from there, and now he had it in his palace in his vacation palace, so to speak, in Yericho. So he had that, and Masayim, so there's that, or Masayim Shkolim Kesef, and 200 shekel of silver, and a bar of gold. So what is this Haderes Shinar? Rav Omer Itzela de Milsa. Rav says it was a robe made out of clean wool. You have in particular the wool of her when a newborn lamb is just born, its wool is very clean. It's as clean as it's ever going to be in its lifetime. So sometimes what you do is you want the wool to stay clean so you can make really high quality clothing from it. So you wrap a cloth around the sheep so the wool will stay clean until you're ready to shear it. So now they use this kind of wool and they made this robe out of that. Shmuel says it was a robe where they dyed it using srif, which is alum, which is a mineral that they could use to dye it fancy colors. Okay. Now, what? Not aloe, but alum. Alum, it's a mineral. It contains aluminum and various other elements in it, and then it's used in the dyeing process. Okay. Now, the pasuk says, so they found out what happened, they brought Ochan over there, they took all of the things that Ochan had taken from the spoil. The pasuk says, Vayatsikum lifnei Hashem, and they poured them out, they spilled them out in front of Hashem. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Nachman, Bavachovtam lifnei Hamakom, means Yeshua took all these things and then threw them down on the ground in front of Hashem, in front of the Orin. Omer the Fanav, he says to Hashem, Rebbeinu Shlalom, Al Elu, just because of these things, just because of this gold and silver and whatever, Yehorig Ruba Shosan, Tehorig Ruba Shosan Hedrin, is it right that most of the Sanhedrin got killed in battle because of these items? Where do we see Ruba Shel Sanhedrin? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says in the battle with Ai, Vayakom Mehem Anshe Ai Kishloishim Veshisha Ish, the men of Ai killed from among the Jewish people about 36 people. Now, what does this mean? About 36. You don't use about for an odd, not for not odd, but whatever. For you use about for like round numbers. Like if it said about 40, then you would say, okay, it doesn't mean literally 40. It means maybe 39, maybe 41. You don't say about 36. So, Batanya, Shloshim v'shisha mamash divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says it means there were actually 36 people. Omalei Rabbi Nechemia, v'chit Shloshim v'shisha hayu. What do you mean? How could you say it was 36? V'alei l'nemet l'kish Shloshim v'shisha ish. It says about 36. So it's not necessarily. Ella, so no, the chof doesn't mean about. The chof as a prefix can have a few different meanings. It can mean about, but it can also mean like. So what it means is, Ella, ze Yorib ben Menashe, means that Yorib ben Menashe was killed in that battle. Sheshoko keneged Rubo shel Sanhedrin, he was so great in Torah, he alone was equivalent to the majority of the Sanhedrin. Now, the Sanhedrin consists of 71, so therefore 36 is the majority. So it means, in other words, he was such a great Talmud Chacham that if he would give his opinion among the Chachamim, then they would rely on him as though he was the majority. So now he was killed in that battle, and that's what it means. Kish Shloisha Vishishish, one person who was like 36 people.
Why don't you say his name?
So the Pasuk doesn't mention his name because maybe we're meant to understand, because then we would think, maybe then, so it was only one person killed, we might say big deal. 36, I mean, we realize that's something to be noticeable. But also, I guess the point is, if it mentioned his name, we wouldn't know how great he is. Like this, by saying Kishloshim Vishishish, we realize what a great Talmud Chacham he was. Mind you, there's more than one Yorib ben Menashe in Jewish history, by the way. There's a later, one of the Shoftim is also named Yorib ben Menashe, and he was a couple hundred years later. He's obviously not the same one that we're talking about over here. Here we're talking about the one we're talking about over here, Papashkas, is the same one from the end of Parshas Matos, that Yitin Moshe as a Gilad, the Yorib that Moshe gave the Gilad to part of Shevet Menashe, and then the Yor Holach, and Yor went and conquered some villages over there and called them Chavis Yor. This is the one we're talking about over here. So that was Yeshua's complaint. So now the Gemara brings in this connection. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, my dichtiv. What does it mean? A pasuk in Mishlei, Tachnunim Yedaber Rosh. The poor person speaks with supplication, like he speaks in a begging tone of voice. V'Oshir, and the rich person Yana Azos speaks up in a very chutzpahdik way. So what does this contrast refer to? Tachnunim yedaber rosh zem Moshe. The first half of the pasuk refers to Moshe, who speaks to Hashem in a pleading tone of voice. But Oshu, Yana Azis, when we're saying the rich person speaks brazenly, is talking about Yeshua. So one point is, in other words, that an interesting point. Yad Ramah says, why are we calling Moshe poor relative to Yeshua? Moshe, in his times, Hashem had done many nisim for the Jewish people, who had done many nisim and many good things for the Jewish people. So Moshe himself felt like he has fewer zchusim. Yeshua, at this point, it's newer. He's still new in his position. This is only a few weeks after he had assumed his role as the leader of the Jewish people. There hadn't been so many nisim yet, so he doesn't feel like his chosim had been so depleted by all the nisim yet. So therefore we can call him an osher. So what do we mean? My time, or what do we mean? What do we mean that we're accusing Yeshua of speaking out of turn as a sinner in a brazen way in front of Hashem? You're going to say, because we just said he threw down these things in front of Hashem and complained that how could Hashem cause Jews to die because of that, or Rubah Shal Sanhedrin to die because of that? What do you mean? That's not such a bad thing for him to do. Didn't Pinchas do exactly the same thing, and we don't hold that against him that he did that. The pasuk says in Tillim, when it summarizes what Pinchas accomplished, Pinchas got up and the plague was stopped. Now, in the simple meaning, vayifalel means he executed judgment, because he did. He went and executed judgment against Zimri and Cosby and caught them in the act and killed them. But now we're understanding vayifalel, meloshin judging, as in, so to speak, judging in front of Hashem. So vayispalo loy nemer, it doesn't say vayispalo, which would mean that he davened to Hashem, elo vayifalo, melamacha also plilus in koinoi. This means that Pinchas came for judgment in front of Hashem, so to speak, accusing Hashem of overreacting, basically. Baba Chavtum, Lifnei Amokim, after he had killed Zimri and Cosby, he went and threw down the bodies in front of Hashem. Omer Lefanav, he says, Ribono Shel Olam, Elu Yiplu Esrim Abba Elof Yisrael. Is it right that because of what these two did, the 24,000 Jews should fall or should die in a plague. So we see that Pinchas did the exact same kind of thing as Yeshua is doing over here. Now, mind you, Maharshal points out there is a difference after all. I mean, by Achan, it was only Achan who did wrong by taking from the spoils. By Zimri and Cosby, he wasn't the only one who was consorting with Nois Midian over there. He had many other Jews who were getting involved with that also. Nevertheless, since the Pasuk says that the plague ended as soon as he did that, then that means that that must mean that they were the primary cause of it. So therefore, everybody else is only like kind of hangers on. So therefore, and so Pinchas is saying to Hashem, you so to speak overreacted over here. So we see that the Dichtiv, and after all, the Pasuk says, "Vayu amesim amagefa abav esrimalef." 24,000 people died in that plague. So we see, therefore, that Pinchas did the same kind of thing. So why are we holding it against Yeshua for doing it? So why don't we say the Oshir of the Pasuk is Pinchas, for example? And we see, in fact, Pinchas was rewarded for what he did. So the Elamei Hacha, you're going to say, because Yeshua, when he's davening to Hashem after this disaster at Ai, he and the Skedim are davening, and he says, Loma Heyavarta Haver Es Omazer Es Yarden. Yeshua says to Hashem in his tefillah, why do you have us cross the Yarden? In other words, if we're going to be defeated here in Eretz Yisrael, then you shouldn't have had us cross the Yarden in the first place. So you could say that that's speaking in a bit of a brazen way to Hashem. Why did you bring us in? No, Moshe Nami Meima Omer Loma Harayos Al Omazer. We find Moshe using a similar turn of phrase when at the end of Parashas Shemos, when things have gotten worse for the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, and he says, why did you do bad to this people? Now, granted, Hashem didn't appreciate Moshe saying that either, as we learned at the beginning of Parashas Va'era. Hashem says, Va'era El Avraham, the Obis never complained to me, I don't really appreciate the fact that you're complaining. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, if the Pasuk in Mishle is making a contrast between Moshe, the Tachnunim Yedaber Rosh, and it's only Yeshua, that Yana Azos, then we can't say that Yeshua, that wouldn't be the case if Yeshua had just done something similar to what Moshe had done in his times. So Elamei Hacha. Rather, what it is we can say that Osher Yana Azos is the end of what Yeshua says. He says, "V'luhay alnu vaneisha be'era Yarden." If only we had been willing to settle on the other side of the Yarden. So that's, in other words, in effect, what he's saying. It would have been better if we had disobeyed Hashem and not crossed the Yarden where you told us to cross, and we would have stayed behind over there. That's an Azostic way of speaking to Hashem to say we would have been better off not listening to you. Going along in the story, the Gemara says, "Vayomer Hashem." So after Yeshua davens this tefillah, then Hashem tells him, "Vayomer Hashem Yeshua kum loch." Hashem says to Yeshua, "Get yourself up." Now, what's the yourself? What's the lacha? Dorash Reb Shila. Reb Shila darshin that Omalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem tells Yeshua, "Shalcha koshim mishalahem." What you did is in a way worse than what they did. So in other words, the kum loch, the word loch suggests that you bear a responsibility for what happened over here. You caused this kind of thing to happen because you didn't fulfill what Hashem said exactly. I said that when you cross the Yarden, you should set up the stones that you take from the Yarden, and you should write the Torah on them and do the whole ceremony that it describes in Parshas Kisaveh. Meanwhile, you went a distance of 60 mil after crossing the Yarden until Har Grizim and Har Evel. So you shouldn't have done that. Now, Tosfos discusses over here. I mean, what do you mean? The fact is, Hashem told them to go to Har Grizim and Har Evel. So therefore, yeah, necessity. If it's going to take a journey of 60 mil to get them, then they have to travel 60 mil. What is Hashem holding it against him? So Tosfos brings like this. There's actually a machloikas tanoim where Har Grizim and Har Evel are. Are they, in fact, the well-known Har Grizim and Har Evel, which are called by those names even now, which flank the city of Shechem? Then yes, that is inland from the Yarden, and therefore they have no choice but to travel over there. But the other opinion is that actually, Rav Elazar says they're actually very close to the Yarden. So in that case, then Hashem is saying to Yeshua, so why did you ignore the one that you should have done it? You should have understood that it means the ones that are near the crossing of the Yarden, and instead you chose to go all the way to the ones by Shechem. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings an opinion, Tosfos brings, that actually it's not that there were actual mountains named Har Grizim and Har Evel near the Yarden, but rather they were supposed to make two big piles of dirt when they, as soon as they cross the Yarden, and name one Har Grisim, and name the other one Har Eivol, and do the ceremony over there. So therefore, according to that, then, so Rav Shila, in his drasha over here, is following one of those opinions that Yeshua should have done it right there by the Yarden, and instead he's going 60 mil. So Hashem is saying, therefore, so you did things worse. You should have done things the right way. One point is, maybe we said before that the whole point of the ceremony on Har Grisim and Har Eivol is that now the Jewish people are establishing a revus between themselves, establishing the idea of Koisol or Eivim Zelazer. Maybe the idea is if they did it as soon as they crossed the Yarden, they would have had much more of an intense connection to Hashem. But after that, and instead they went 60 mil, and that cooled off the effect of the nests from crossing the Yarden. Anyway, so that was Rav Shila's drasha. Bosa de Nofok, after Rav Shila left the Beis Medrash, Oikim Rav Amor Alei, Rav set up an Amora in front of himself. He didn't want to openly contradict Rav Shila, who was the Rosh Hashiva, but now that Rav Shila had left, Rav took over to continue the drasha. So he had an Amora in front of him as the Rosh Yeshiva of that time would usually do, to explain what he's going to say to the Tzibur, the Darash, and he darshaned as follows, not like what Rav Shila said. the Pasuk, after all, says, later on in Sefer Yehoshua, it says, Kashet Tzivah Hashem as Moshe, just as Hashem commanded his servant Moshe, Kain Tzivah Moshe as Yeshua, that's exactly what Moshe commanded Yeshua, V'chein also Yeshua, and Yeshua did just as he was told by Moshe, Loi Hesu Dovah Mekolosh Tzivah Hashem as Moshe, he did not omit anything that Hashem told Moshe, so therefore, you can't learn like Rav Shila, that he or Yeshua made such a blatant mistake, and then didn't do the Har Grisim and Har Eivol thing right by the Yarden like he was supposed to. So Rav explains in his drasha, Ma Tamad Lema Kumloch, then what is Hashem saying, Kumloch? Omaloi, Hashem is saying, Ata Garam Talahem, you caused this because I didn't tell you to make a cherem on the property of Yericho. If you hadn't made a cherem, then you decided on your own that there should be. And okay, Yeshua had valid reasons for doing it, because they had conquered it on Shabbos, because it was the first place they had conquered in Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless, Hashem says to Yeshua that you made the conditions possible for that cherem to be violated and therefore for this disaster to happen. That's why when they fought against the city of Ai the second time, and this time they conquered it, Hashem tells them in advance, due to Ai and to its king, like you did to Yircha and its king, kill them, but the pasuk goes on to say, keep the spoils for yourself. So this time, and Hashem is telling Yeshua, don't make the same mistake, and make the spoils off limits. This time, allow everybody to take whatever they want, and that way there won't be this kind of problem in the future. By the way, when we're talking about this idea of Har Grisim and Har Eivol being before the conquest of Yericho, in the Psukim, actually, it's out of order. In the Psukim, in Sefer Yehoshua, the conquest of Yericho is in Perek Vav. In Perek Zion, you have the first battle with Ai and the defeat and finding out who the guilty party is and executing him. That's in Perek Zion. Perek Ches is the second battle of Ai, and only at the end of Perek Ches do you then have the ceremony on Har Grisim and Har Eivol. So some Mephoshim explain, in fact, on a chap level, that means only then did they do that. On the other hand, from the Gemara over here, at least according to Rav Shila, it comes out that the Psukim are out of order, and they did in fact do it as soon as they did in fact do it first thing after they crossed the Yarden, except again, according to Rav Shila, they should have done it by the Yarden rather than going inland, and according to Rav, they did it correctly, they did it in the place where they're supposed to, and then they returned to the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael, and they started conquering Yericho.
So Hashem's telling, don't let those, don't give tzedakah, don't give, we find many times we're out different places that they conquered and they gave it to Hekdesh.
That's
whatever.
Fine. They can say, for example, that, so of course, they could say that some of the spoils should be reserved for Hekdesh. But by Yericho, Yeshua was saying that everything other than what's going to the treasury of the Mishmikdash is to be destroyed. The normal way of doing things would be a certain percentage of it goes to the treasury of the Mishkan and the rest is free for the taking. So now, by Yericho, you haven't done that. Now Hashem is telling him, by I and by all future battles, make sure you do that. By the way, there is another point as well. There's Medrash that says that Rashi, I think Rashi mentions it on the Pasuk, that another meaning when Hashem says Kum Loch is that Hashem says to Yeshua, you did wrong by not leading the Jewish people. Yeah, Rashi brings it actually in Chumash as well. You did wrong by not leading the Jewish people into that battle by eye. You're supposed to be the leader. You're not supposed to just be staying behind in the Machna and sending people to fight like you did in that first battle of eye. And in fact, in the second battle, we do find clearly in the Pesukim that Yeshua is the general and is directing the troops. Okay, speaking of Yericho, so let's talk, and then speaking of where Hashem says to Yeshua, you have to do better. So now, the Gemara brings another drasha where we also see that Yeshua was not doing something that should have been done, and he's called to account for it. The Pasuk says earlier, at the end of Perek Hay in Yeshua, Vayhi b'yos Yeshua b'Yericho, when Yeshua was in Yericho. Now, it doesn't mean actually in Yericho yet, the conquest of Yericho is only in Perek Vav, and this is in Perek Hay. The Gemara elsewhere explains it means he was right outside the city, and to some extent in Halacha, such an area is called the Bura Shalir, it's considered part of the city. Anyway, so when Yeshua was in that area, he lifted up his eyes and he saw that he sees a man standing in front of him, so the pasuk mentions he sees this man standing with a drawn sword, and Yeshua asks him, "Are you on our side or are you on our enemy's side?" And the man answers, the man says, "No, I'm neither of the above. Ki ani sar tzva Hashem. I'm the general of the armies of Hashem. After Vossi, now I've come." So there's a malach coming to help the Jewish people. And the pasuk continues, "Vayipol Yeshua al ponav arutz of Yishtochu," and Yeshua fell on his face to the ground and bowed down to him. Rashi explains on the Psukim that what it was is that back in Parshas Mishpatim, Hashem had told Moshe that I'm going to send a malach to lead you into Eretz Yisrael, and then later on in Parshas Kisisa, after the Chet Ha'egel, Hashem says, "I'm going to do that," and Moshe says, "Absolutely not. I mean, panecha hochem, if you personally aren't leading us, then we don't want to leave here. We don't want any malachim. We want only you, Hashem." So the malach left, so now the malach is coming back in Yeshua's times and saying, "Now I'm ready to do the job that Hashem sent me for all those years earlier." So the Gemara asked, "Hechi Ovid Hachi?" How could Yeshua? Now this was at night apparently, because otherwise Yeshua should know whether he's a Yid or a Goyim, whether he's on the Jews' side or the side of the Goyim. So therefore, so it must be that it was at night and you couldn't see him clearly. So now the question is, "Hechi Ovid Hachi?" How could Yeshua do that and bow down to him? A person is not allowed to say shalom to somebody else at night where you can't see him, and shalom, after all, is the name of Hashem. We have to be concerned. That's not a person, but rather a shed, and we should not be using a shem shemayim. The name shalom is the name of Hashem. We should not be using it on a shed, on a koyach of tumma like that. Tosfos points out, fine, this isn't going to apply in the city, because you don't usually have shadim in such an area as well. But here you're talking about it was outside the city, it was in the fields, so therefore the Gemara is asking about that. Tosfos also points out, elsewhere the Gemara points out that a shed doesn't have a bavur de bavur. A regular person has a shadow, and then a shadow of the shadow, meaning you have a more intense shadow where the light hits them more strongly, and a weaker shadow further out. A shed, the Gemara says, at the end of Yevamos doesn't have that. Which in Chassidus means that a shed is a koyach hatuma, doesn't have makif to makif, whatever. Anyway, why couldn't Yeshua recognize him by that? Again, because it's nighttime, there's no shadows. Anyway, so the same thing, why is he bowing down to him? The answer is shiny hosim. It's different over there. Because he says, "I'm the captain of the hosts of Hashem," so he's not a shed. The Gemara asks, "Dumam shakri." So if he's a shed, he could be lying. And the answer is gemiri. We do have the Kabbalah. Dolem mapki shem shemayim levatola. Even the shedim, as much as they're kochas atuma, they're not going to use a name of Hashem in vain. So therefore, if he says sartzva Hashem, then we know he's not a shed. So therefore, Yeshua can bow to him out of respect. Rashi points out, if it weren't for that, no, forget about saying shalom, to bow down to it would be tantamount to bowing down to Avodah Zarah. People would worship Shadim after all. But like this, we know he's not a shed because he uses this expression, Sarzwa Hashem Atabasi. Now, what does the Malach say to him? Amalei tells him, Emesh bitaltim Tomet Rabbein Abayim. Listen, yesterday you failed to bring the Tomet Rabbein Abayim. Now, the point is, Rashi explains like this. If he's saying, after Bossi, he's saying, "I'm coming now," that implies I should have come earlier. I should have come for something else that you already did earlier. But now I'm coming for something that you're doing right now. So therefore, so he's saying that yesterday, this is by night, but yesterday during the daytime, then you failed to bring the Talmud Rabbeinu Habayim because you were busy getting ready for the war against Yericho. Now, what you should have done is that you should have gone back to the at that point, the Mishkan was temporarily set up in the city of Gilgal, which is a little distance from Yericho. They should have gone back to Gilgal and brought the Talmud over there. Tosfos elsewhere explains that it's true the Kohanim are not busy preparing for war, but the Oren was with them in Yericho because they're going to be doing circuits around Yericho every day with the Oren, so they're preparing for that. But instead, they should have brought the Oren back to the Mishkan, and then they would bring the Korbanos over there. In fact, actually, the Rashba says maybe they did bring the Korban, but they're supposed to have the Jews over there. There's supposed to be Jews present when it's being brought. The Ma'amadah says they set up in later times, and here they didn't have that because they're all Yericho. The Achshav, and now the Malach says to him, "Bitaltam Talmud Torah." Now you're being mevatel Talmud Torah because instead of now it's by night, you anyway not fighting, you should be learning Torah. it says on the side, it should say Omalei. So Yeshua asked about Ezemehen Basa. Well, okay, we understand. We did two things wrong. Which one are you coming to tell us off for now? Omalei, so Malach says, after Basi, I'm coming for now, meaning the thing that applies right now. The Talmud you miss, then there's no making up for that. But now you're, but now at least you could be, now at least you could be learning Torah. Another point is, Torah, you can call it after in the sense that Torah is 24-7, unlike the Talmud, which has only a certain defined time. Another vote on it, of how we see that it was these two things is because Yeshua asks him, Tosfos mentions elsewhere, Halonu ata im tzareinu. Are you for Lonu or are you for tzareinu? So Lonu would refer to the Torah, Torah tziva Lonu Moshe. And tzareinu would refer to the Korbanos, which help protect us against our enemies. So now he's saying, after Bossy, I'm coming for now, for Talmud Torah, which you could be doing right now, and which Torah is always now, because it's always time for Torah. So Miyad, so right away, the next time Yeshua had an opportunity to fix up that kind of problem, before the battle with Ai, they're preparing by night, they're setting up ambushes and all, but still, the Pasuk says, Vayolan Yeshua, Balaylo Ahu, B'Secha Emet. Yeshua stayed overnight there in the valley. Now, what is that? The redouction from that, the Omer of Yechon, Malamed Shalom Be'umka Shal Halacha. This teaches us that that night, Yeshua spent the night in the depths of Halacha. So he fixed up that mistake, and the next time he stayed up by night, instead of working on the strategy and whatever for the battle, he's learning Torah. There's actually not a pasuk that says Vayolan Yeshua Balaylo Ahu B'Secha Emet. There are two very similar psukim in connection with the second battle of Ai. One says Vayelech Yeshua Balaylo Ahu B'Secha Emet, that he went in the valley, and the other one says Vayolan Yeshua Balaylo Ahu B'Secha Om, that Yeshua stayed overnight among the people. The Gemara, Tosfos points out elsewhere, this Gemara is also brought in Megillah and in some other places, Tosfos points out that the Gemara is basically taking the two psukim and then combining them together to give us this Jerusha. And the Gemara continues, Omen of Shmuel Ba'unyim, Shmei Derav, Godol, Talmud Torah, Yosem HaKrovas Tmidin. We see from this that learning Torah is greater than even bringing the Korban Talmud. Shenema after Bossi, because we see the Malach is telling him that I'm coming for now, as opposed to, I'm coming to tell you all for having missed the Talmud Rabbeinu Habayim. The Gemara in Megillah, in that connection, mentions we're talking Davka Talmud Torah de Rabbim is greater than Akrovas to me. Because otherwise, you wouldn't be Mavatal Torah to hear Megillah, yeah. So now speaking of a story with a malach, so now the Gemara is going to bring another thing involving a malach accusing the Jewish people, or defending the Jewish people against an accusation, rather. Omele Abayelet Avdimi, Haikra, the following pasuk that I'm going to quote you, B'ma'arava, in Eretz Yisrael, where you, Avdimi, come from, B'mai Mukmitulei, how do you understand the following pasuk? Al teitze l'riv maher. The pasuk says, "Don't go quickly to get involved in an argument." Pen matas b'achrisa, because what are you going to do at the end? The argument may get out of hand. V'hachlim ois chareacha, when your friend embarrasses you in the course of the argument. And the next pasuk continues, "Riv chariv esreacha." If you need to have an argument with your friend, then go ahead, have your argument. V'soid acher al tegal, but don't reveal somebody else's secret. So what does this pasuk mean? Are you supposed to have an argument? Are you not supposed to have an argument? What's this business about not revealing somebody else's secret? Ben Yoyada points out in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Dimi himself points out, in Eretz Yisrael they were exceptionally careful with this thing of not being Malbim Pnei Chaver Beradim, so therefore they must have a good explanation of this pasuk, which is telling us not to do that. So how do you understand this? So like this. Now for this we have to go to a pasuk in Yechezkel where Hashem tells him, Leich emur lahem Yisrael, go tell the Jewish people a nevuah in Perek Tes Zayin of Yechezkel. It's a long nevuah giving a whole mashal of how Hashem took care of the Jewish people so lovingly and then how they betrayed him and worshipped Avodah Zarah, and so it's a long perek, a long mashal, and it starts off, Avicha emuri v'imech chittis. Your father was an emuri and your mother was a chittis. So in other words, Yechezkel is saying, now in context, the Targum Yonason on the pasuk explains you acting as though your ancestors were from Chiti and Knani, you're as corrupt as they were, but here, on the face of it, it sounds like, Rashi says, Terach and his ancestors came from Knan. Now they lived in Bava, they lived in Ur Kasdim. But nevertheless, the understanding seems to be that they originally were from Eretz Yisrael, and then at some point they migrated to Bavel. So what's this expression of Vicha Emuri v'imich chittis? It sounds like we're saying something derogatory about Avraham and Sarah, as though it's calling them an Emuri and a chittis. Omre ruach paskoinis lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So a ruach paskoinis says in front of the, so Rashi identifies ruach paskoinis as Malach Gavriel. So Malach Gabriel says to Hashem, you shouldn't say that. On the other hand, Hagros Agros says, Einoi Kein. It's not so. Evidently, he learns that Ruach Paskoinis is some other Midas Adin or something. Says, Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam, Yivoyu Avraham V'Sarah V'Yamru L'Fanecha. If Avraham and Sarah were to stand in front of you, after Omer Lahem U'Machlem Oysam, would you say such a thing to their face and embarrass them that they were like an Emuri and a Chittis? And this Ruach Paskoinis, Gavriel, says to Hashem, you know, listen, you're going to have an argument with your Jewish people, speak about them themselves, but don't reveal a secret, don't talk about things against others, meaning against Avraham and Sarah. And the pasuk, in fact, that's the previous pasuk says, Pen matas b'achrisa. What are you going to do at the end? At the end, if you say such a thing, and Avraham and Sarah come and complain, how can you talk like that about us? Then why are you doing that? So the Ruach Paskoinis is speaking up in defense of the Jewish people. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says that's why Hashem did that. Hashem wanted to motivate the Ruach Paskoinis to speak up in defense of the Jewish people. By the way, in Halacha we have this perek of Yechezkel. There were places where they had the minhag to use it as aftera. Abayim is actually the Taimonim use it as aftera for Parshas Shmos, but you have an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer at the end of Masechta Megillah that says that you can't. And one reason is because of this pasuk, because it's speaking in a derogatory way about Avraham and Sarah. So the Gemara asks me, Umi is the Rishus of Kol Ahai? Does Gavriel, a Malach, he's a Nivra after all, does he have a Rishus to speak so blatantly to Hashem and tell him you shouldn't do that? And the answer is Ain. Yes, as a matter of fact, he does. Hashem gave him that permission. He actually has three names aside from his name Gavriel. He has three names: Piskoin, Itmoin, Sigroin. And they piskoin Hashem, piskoin shapoisik dvarim klape maila, because he states facts in front of Hashem that Hashem, he can so to speak tell Hashem you shouldn't be doing that. Itmoin shoitim I'm going to say in Israel, he's called itmoin because he closes up and hides away the averus of the Jewish people. Sigroin kibin shesoiger, once he closes up the discussion, shuv ein etaseach, then nobody else can open up. Meaning, if it comes to the point where he's begged for rachmim for the Jewish people, and Hashem doesn't want to, then at that point no other malach or no other nivra is going to try, because then at that point they realize that the situation is hopeless. So the point is that yes, Hashem grants Gabriel the permission to do that in order to defend the Jewish people. Okay. Getting back to the war in Ai and the defeat that the Jewish people had there the first time, a pasuk says in Iyov, Hayarech Shuach Haloi Betzor. Have you set up your tefillah not in a time of trouble? In other words, did you, before, proactively, before the tzara comes, did you set up and did you daven, Eov's friends are telling him, particularly this is part of Elihu's speech over there, did you make sure to daven before the tzara came? And then you would have been strengthened. The pasuk continues, then there would have been those who helped strengthen your tefillah, so it would be accepted. So from this we learn that a person should always daven proactively before the tzara comes. If Avraham Avinu had not proactively davened hundreds of years earlier between Beis El and I in Parshas Lech Lecha, there wouldn't have been left of the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the Jewish people themselves, even the tiniest remnant, in other words, in the schus of his tefillah, only the kishloshim v'shisha ish were killed. So we see that it's always better to have to daven before the trouble comes rather than to wait until it comes and then start davening. The Shlokish Amar, the Shlokish says another thing we can learn from the pasuk. A person who strengthens himself and puts in effort to daven the down here, then there will be no tzarim, there will be no malachim who are makatrig on him lamaila, because he put in that effort into davening. Rabbi Yechanan says another meaning. A person should always be asking for rachmim from Hashem, that everyone should be strengthening his power, so that there shouldn't be any mekatrigim, any opposition to his tefillah lamaila. So hayarech shuachos, he darshens, you should set up your tefillah, you should be davening. Make sure, loy v'tzor, do it in a way, daven that you should not have tzorim, and then instead, v'chol ma'amatzei koyach, that all of them on the contrary should be supporting your efforts in davening. Now, who are we talking about that should strengthen you? So the Meiri says we mean other people. Most Mephoshim, though, understand that it means the Malachim. And this is actually, you have a big discussion among Rishonim about the whole question of having a Bakoshis addressed to Malachim. Now, we have Tfilas and like Machnusei Rachamim Midas Harachim Aleinu Isgaugali and Malachi Rachim Meshosei Elyon and so forth. It's quite controversial whether we can say such tefillas. Here we have a Gemara that seems to say that you could ask the Malachim to help your tefillas out. And there are other Gemaras that also seem to imply that in various ways. On the other hand, for example, the Yerushalmi says that we don't daven to Michal, we don't daven to Gavriel, we daven exclusively to the Eibishter. So there's quite a bit of discussion among the poskim about whether it's proper to be addressing the Malachim with our tefillahs. So the Maisa actually, and in fact, for example, the Maharal says that no, it means a person should be asking Hashem, that Hashem should have the Malachim, that Hashem should command the Malachim to help him. And therefore, points to the Maharal, Yitaka shouldn't be saying such tefillahs. On the other hand, various Rishonim and Achronim say that no, it is fine to do it. If you look in the back of the Machzor, actually, there's a footnote in Lakutim Minhogim over there, in the Minhogim of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur that Rebbe brings over there. We do say Machnisei Rachmim, we do say Midas Harachmim, Aleinu is Galgali, even though there are some Machzorim that have a different Nusach, and a footnote over there that Rebbe brings all the sources, pro and con, about this business of talking to Malachim. And then he brings in the end from Shurish Mitzvah Zatfila. Of course, we're not saying the Malachim have an independent power, Chas V'Shalom, but we're asking them to be the tziner, to be the conduits to bring our tefillahs to the Eivishter. That's a valid thing to do. And that fits with our Gemara over here. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, I mean, Nayin Shekipa Loi Viduya V'chula. How do we know that Ochan's Vidui was, in fact, Mechaper for him? And that's why we tell every person before he's going to be executed by Beis Din, say Vidui. So the Gemara says the Mishnah brought a pasuk about it. So now the Gemara brings Tanan Abanan Minayin Shekipa Lo Vidui. How do we know that his Vidui was Mechaper for him? So first the pasuk that we brought to the Mishnah. Shenema by Yomer Lo Yeshua. Yeshua says to Ochan, Me Achar Tonu. Why have you troubled us? Yakor Hashem. Hashem will trouble you on this day, from which we learn you're only troubled today when you're getting Mrs. Vesin. But you're not troubled because you said Vidri. But then we have another pasuk which the Mishnah had not brought, where also we see that Ochan regained his share in Olam Abba. The pasuk says in Dibra Yamim, Uvnei Zerach, Zimri, the Eson, the Haman, the Chalkel, the Dora, Pulam Chamisha. These he has altogether five. Now Zimri, the Gemara explains, is going to be another name for Ochan. So my Kulam Chamisha, what do you mean all five? Kulam Chamisha, Hein L'Olam Abba, they're all five equal in Olam Abba. Marsha points out that Eson, Haman, Kalkal, and Dara, we find elsewhere, we mention them in Sefer Melachim, as great Chachamim. So we understand that, and it says Shlomo was even wiser than them, so we understand that they were great people. They're certainly Bnei Olam Haba. By putting Zimri, who the Gemara is saying is another name for Achan, with them, it shows that he also gets his place in Olam Haba. Olam Chamisha, they're all five on equal level. Well, Ksiv Zimri, Ksiv Achan. Now here we're calling him Zimri, and then in the story in Yeshua is called Achan. What was his real name? By the way, I mean in a simple level, the pasuk actually in Divrei Yomim then goes on to say that mentions Achan separately, but the Gemara is doubting over here that Zimri is identical with Achan. So Rabbi Shmuel Chadam Achan Shmuel, one says his real name was Achan, Zimri Zimri. He acted like the way Zimri acted. Where was Zimri with Cosby over there? And he. As we learned on Amar Aleph, he was Boyo Naira Marasa, so therefore he did the same kind of Avera as Zimri. V'chadam is Zimri Shmo, the other says his real name is Zimri, V'lom Nekoshmei Ochon, She'ikein Avonesein Sho Yisrael, because he caused the Averas of the Jewish people to be rolled together, to be like something that surrounded them. Ikein is Moloshan Achna, a snake that lies in a circle and then prevents people from getting through. So the same way like Ochan called the Averis of the Jewish people to encircle them so that they were trapped inside it until they killed him. The Mishnah had said him any a daily svada schola. We said if a person doesn't know how to say vidui, then we tell him tami sasi kapara akal renosai. And Rabbi Yehuda Oimon Chola. Rabbi Yehuda had said that if he knows he's not guilty of this particular avera, that he's been framed, then he should say tami sasi kapara akal renosai, except for this one. And the Chacham said no, then everybody's going to say that lenakas atzman in order to make themselves appear innocent. So he must say so what? Nak atzman. So let them make themselves innocent. Who cares? And the answer is Kadesh Lohitzi Laz, Shaloy Lohitzi Laz, al Batidinim ala Edim. You don't want people to speak negatively about the Batidinim and the Edim. People are going to say that, yeah, maybe in fact the guy was framed. Maybe the Edim were false Edim. Maybe the Beis Din didn't interrogate the Edim correctly. And therefore, we don't want people to call the Beis Din and the Edim into disrepute. So the Gemara brings in this connection. It happened, Taka, that there was a person who was being taken out to be executed. Omar, he says this Loshen, that Rabbi Yehuda says, Im yesh bi oven zeh, he says, if I'm actually guilty of this Avera, loy tehemi sasi kapara l'chol avanoisei, that I'm taking on myself, my misa will not be a kapara for all my Averas, meaning I'm willing to go to Gehenim to get my remaining Averas cleaned up. The im ein bi oven zeh, but if I'm not in fact guilty of this avera, if in fact I was framed, which he was saying he was, tehemi sasi kapara l'chol avanoisei, then fine, my misa should be a kapara for all my averas. I didn't do this avera, but I'm sure I did other ones. Ubeisin l'chol yisrael menukin. Beis Din and the rest of the Jewish people are also innocent of any responsibility for it because they did what they could. But the Edim should never be forgiven because they framed me. When the Chacham heard that, they realized he must be telling the truth. Like you said yesterday, he's not Sam hacking a China before he's going to be killed. But Omru, the Chacham said, Lachzira Yefshir. At this point, we can't bring him back to Beis Din to rejudge him. Shekran Nigzer of Zeta, because Nigmar Adzin already. And this is not evidence that we said before. If you find actual evidence that would exonerate him, then fine, you bring him back to Beis Din. But the Edim themselves, we can't, given Shehigid Shuvan Echozer Magid, once the Edim have said Edus, they can't retract their Edus. We'd have to find other evidence, and we don't have. We don't. He's saying they're lying, and maybe even they themselves admit that they're lying, but at this point, there's nothing we can do about it. So we have no choice but to execute him. And in fact, yes, if he's right and the Edim were lying, then they're the ones who are going to be bearing the responsibility for his death. So the Gemara says, Pshita, of course, you don't take him back in this case. Kol Kamine, are we going to believe him to that extent? What do you mean? He's saying, maybe after all, he's not saying something true. Maybe he is saying a last minute thing to try and make the Edim feel guilty or something. What would even be the Habam in it to say that we should bring him back? And the answer is, exactly that. If the Edim themselves change their mind and say, you know what, based on now we realize that what we did wrong and we want to retract our Edus, then they can't do that. So the Gemara says, so what? There's still no Chiddush in that. Even if they want to take back their Edus, that wouldn't matter. Once an Edus said an Edus, his Edus in Beis Din, he can't retract it. If you find other evidence, if you find the Edim themselves apostle, if you find that the relatives of Psulim, as we learned in the third parak, if you find other Edim that are machish or mazim them, then fine, but not just because they themselves retract. So what's the Habam then?
But if they agree they were lying, you can't.
Doesn't matter.
Kivin Shehigin Shomayne Chodes Ramagin. That's how it works. So the answer is Loitzricha the Afal Gavda Koyavi Timer LeMosayu. Even if they explain what motivated them to do it. So now we would say, you know what? Now they're giving an explanation. Yeah, now we should realize they tackle we're lying and we should undo the din. Nevertheless, we don't. Kiha hu maisa de boya mixa. Like the story of boya mixa. Boya mixa can mean that should be covered up, but actually mixa means a moichis, means a tax collector. Boya, one possibility is that was the man's name. The Yerushalmi tells the story, and Rashi gives a story over here with a little variation where the guy's name was Ben Mayan, and said, therefore, Boya would be like a shortened version of that. The story Rashi tells, the Yerushalmi here tells more or less the same story with a little variation, is that there was a Jewish tax collector who was a Rosha who died on the same day as a Godola era, on the same day as a great Talmud Chacham in town. So everybody was coming to the Levaya of the Talmud Chacham. Meanwhile, the Moichus barely has a minion for his Levaya, just his relatives. Then they were attacked by bandits. So everybody ran away from the Mitzvahs. There was one Talmud who stayed together with his Rebbe. He's not going to allow his Rebbe's ordering to just stay there unattended. Later on, when everybody came back, they got mixed up. They went over to the Levaya, they went over to the Oren of the Moichus, and they thought he was the Talmud Chacham, and they're going and burying him with great honor, and vice versa. Only the relatives of the Moichus are going and burying the Chacham. So the Talmud feels very bad about it. Ha'itochan, that my Rebbe suffered such a bizoyan, and that this Moichus was given such honor. Then he has a dream where his Rebbe comes to him and says, you can see my great covered in Gan Eden. The reason why this happened to me is because one time I heard somebody making fun of a Talmud Chacham and I didn't protest. So therefore, midah keneged midah, I lost this last honor of mine. The Moichus, on the other hand, one time he made a big party in honor of the mayor of the city. The mayor never showed up, so he has all this food, which would otherwise go to waste, so he gave it to the poor people. So for that one thing that he did, he got this honor that he's honored with a nice Leviah. But meanwhile, he's suffering terribly in Gan Eden. He's suffering terribly in Gehenna. So the Talmud says, how long does he have to suffer over there? So the Rebbe tells him, until Shimon ben Shattach takes his place. Shimon ben Shattach, he's the Nasi of the Jewish people. What did he do wrong? So the Rebbe explains to him that there's a place in the Ashkelon where there are 80 witches who are practicing Kishuf, and Shimon ben Shattach knows about it, and he hasn't done anything about it. So the next day, the Talmud goes and tells Shimon ben Shattach, and Shimon does as follows. He gathers together 80 strong Talmudim of his. He waits for the next rainy day. Then he goes to the cave where the witches hang out. And he gives each of the bachurim a change of clothes in a jar, so it'll stay dry. He himself goes into the cave, and he tells the women, I'm a great magician myself, and I can show you you show me your magic, I'll show you mine. So they show him their various kinds of magic tricks, so therefore he can see the attack of Hayav Misa. Then he says, now my magic trick will be, I'm going to whistle, and all of a sudden you'll have 80 people over here in dry clothes. So he whistles, the Talmidim hear the signal, they quickly put on the dry clothes and run into the cave. Each one takes one of the witches and lifts her off the ground, because when a person can do Kishuf only when they're in contact with the ground, it's like an electrical circuit. So then they take them to Basin and they get them executed. So that was the end of that coven of witches. Now, the end of the story was, the relatives of these witches were very angry at Shimon ben Shattach for killing their relatives. So they decided to get back at Shimon ben Shattach by framing his son for an Avera. So two false Edim came to Beis Din, testifying that the son had done some kind of Avera, that he's Chayav Nisa. When the son was being taken out to be executed, everything that the Edim said checked out and everything, they went, and he said the thing that we said before, the responsibility will be on the Edim. The Edim themselves were so frightened that they told why they did that, why we gave false Edus, because we were angry at Shimon ben Shattach for what he did to our relatives. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying, Kibbutz Shehigid, Shuvan Echozer Magid, and therefore they had no choice but to do the Misas Beis Din anyway, because the only way would be if we could impeach the veracity of the Edim some other way, not just because them themselves saying, even if they themselves give a reason for it. So the Yerushalmi actually, when it tells the story, he says that Shimon ben Shattach himself was thinking to exonerate his own son after all, but the son himself tells him, you know what, Tati, do what you have to. This is halacha, is halacha. We're not going to bend halacha even for the fact that I'm your son and you're my father. I'll be dying al Kiddush Hashem, basically, but that's what it is. We have to uphold halacha no matter what. So we see, therefore, that even when the Edom are giving such a reason, we still don't undo the din. We still, that the din is the din, and that's how it is. Boya Mirza, yeah. So on one level, Boya Mirza means the story ought to be covered up because it's a bit of a terrible story that a person we know that a person was executed who was innocent. But on another level, Boya is the person's name and Mirza is the tax collector.